This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast, where we have had a very big emphasis this morning on making things. Make It in the Emirates has been taking place in Abu Dhabi, and we've been speaking to people, well, in all ends of the supply chain, as it were. We've been speaking to someone who is making something here in the Emirates, and that something is perfume. Rawia Kato is General Manager of CPL Aromas. They've got a big factory in Jebel Ali Free Zone. We've been speaking to a man who helps fund people to make things in the Emirates. Ahmed Al-Nakbi is the CEO of Emirates Development Bank, or EDB. They've just pledged another $5 billion to help people get industry up and running. And we've been speaking to a man who's been setting a lot of the policy when it comes to making things in the Emirates, His Excellency Omar Al-Suwaidi from the Ministry of Industry and Advanced Technology. We've also been looking at the health of banks. Unsurprisingly, they've had a very good year. Asad Ahmed is the managing director of Alvarez and Marcel. Rich has been speaking to him about banking balance sheets and what it all means for customers. You're listening to The Business Breakfast, where we have a special focus this morning on making things.
I'd like to make it with you. I really think that we could make it, girl.
To be fair, we did just interview a company that's helping people to literally make babies in the Emirates.
We did indeed, yes. If you missed the interview, it was with the lawyers from Baker McKenzie on their 1 year maternity leave. But the main focus, let's be honest, is on making stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Factories, stuff that Richard quite likes because he likes putting on a hard hat and a high-vis vest and stomping around in a pair of steel cap boots.
Yeah, can pretend I'm in the Village People circa 1978. But the big event happening down the road in Abu Dhabi is the main focus for this. Started yesterday, continues today, and the numbers being thrown around are pretty impressive, aren't they, Brandy?
Yeah, they are indeed. So there's a lot of investment going in. We're talking billions of dirhams from ADNOC, big oil and gas company, but also Pure Health, which is a very large healthcare company, but one that we really, I would argue, didn't start thinking about until they went public. We know there will be a lot of pledges. It's day two of the conference today. And in fact, we've got someone who's messaged us in this morning to say that they're driving over there at the moment from Ras Al Khaimah. So people coming from across the UAE to attend Make It in the Emirates. We know that making more stuff and shipping more stuff is right in the middle of several policies with quite punchy targets. So to set the scene this morning, let's find out where we are at the moment. Khadija Hack is Chief Economist of Emirates NBD. We've asked her, if we actually strip out the oil sector, where are we in terms of how much manufacturing and industry contributes to the UAE economy?
Manufacturing accounted for around 11% of UAE GDP in 2023. The official statistics don't break out oil-related manufacturing from non-oil-related manufacturing. But if we look at Dubai's GDP, which is almost entirely non-oil, manufacturing accounts for around 8.5% of the Emirates' GDP.
So there you go. The question is, and this is one of the questions I think that's been asked, well, it's been assumed that it couldn't happen, and now that it is happening, we have to look at how. Because once upon a time, we just assumed that you wouldn't make stuff here because you could make stuff cheaper elsewhere. Can we compete now that we are indeed, well, it's not even we are building factories, we have built factories. A lot of those free zones are nearly full. How do we, though, compete on cost?
The UAE's manufacturing strategy is not focused on heavy industry that's labour or energy intensive. The aim is really to attract high-tech, high-value-added industry that would benefit from the UAE's excellent infrastructure and its geographical advantages. This type of manufacturing that the UAE is looking to grow includes pharmaceuticals, food and beverage, clean tech and electronics.
And there is a huge amount of competition for that at the moment. If we just look at the headlines of the last 24 hours, we've got Elon Musk's AI startup, XAI, raising $6 billion in the latest round of fundraising that it's had. We've had the Chinese government putting $47 billion into a I just like the name, which is why I included it in the headlines, Third National Integrated Circuit Industry Investment Fund, or as it is colloquially known, Big Fund 3. They want to be building semiconductors at home so that they are controlling the bits you need to make AI. They're taking care of their own supply chain. SoftBank as well, in the last 24 hours, saying that it was setting up $1 million sort of target for the amount that it wanted to put into AI. It's going to put $9 billion into different AI investments. So we're not the only ones that want to own that high-tech industry.
We're not. And we're clearly doing a good job. If it's nearly 10% of GDP here in Dubai, just over that in the country, that's a good number. And we know there's more happening. We're speaking to, in about 20 minutes' time, someone who works for a global company, CPL Aromas, that has five big perfume factories around the world. One of them's here. They've looked around the world and we could build this anywhere. They've decided to build it here. So we'll find out why it was more cost competitive to do it here for them. But the flip side is, you mentioned all those big tech investments. We don't have that kind of big tech manufacturing here. I'll give you two examples. I was in India a couple of weeks ago, Tamil Nadu, Chennai, the city of Chennai. That's where Foxconn set up its big new factory. 10% of the world's iPhones were made there last year. It'll be 20% this year. It's not in Dubai. It's in Chennai. The other one is, you mentioned AI and chip manufacturer. Remember, we had bold ambitions to build chip manufacturing here when Abu Dhabi invested in global foundries with one of the world's big chip makers. And there was all talk of, yeah, we're going to build silicon in the desert and all that kind of stuff. Didn't happen. Those big chip manufacturing factories were not built here. And there are reasons they were not built here. If you know what they are, let us know. So this is not me saying, oh, bar humbug, we can't have manufacturing here. We absolutely can.
But you look at what makes the most sense. So do we need to do absolutely everything in the back door? I take, again, the Elon Musk headline, $6 billion for XAI. He's taking on OpenAI, which is his former company. The investors include Prince Awali, Saudi billionaire and businessman, and a Dubai-based company that I'm going to put my hand up, hadn't heard of before, VY.
Oh, we've certainly got skin in the game, no question at all. And I'm not complaining that we're not making the stuff here. I mean, it's a relatively small region, isn't it? You were speaking to the guys from Novo Nordisk last week. They're the Ozempic and what's the other weight loss drug?
They do Ozempic and Mounjaro.
No,
and
they don't do Mounjaro. That's Eli Lilly.
Wegovy.
That's it.
But now you've mentioned Eli Lilly. So, and your point's interesting. So I asked the local boss of Novo Nordisk, that's the Danish company that is now about half of the Danish economy. Not quite, but you can track how Denmark's GDP is now doing on a quarterly basis by how Novo Nordisk is basically doing on a quarterly basis. They are ramping up their capital expenditure. They doubled it in the last 5 years. They're looking to basically double it again, and that's going into factories to make more, not just of these drugs, but of other drugs for chronic diseases tied to, you know, they make a lot of insulin, for example. They're not looking to make anything here because they said economies of scale-wise, the sheer size of the factories that they build mean that it wouldn't necessarily work here. So they're doing it in other markets. Eli Lilly, I think, is also looking to ramp up the amount that it can produce, but also looking at just buying other factories. I hope I've got that right. I seem to think I read that in the last couple of days. So whether you expand organically, whether you expand through mergers and acquisitions, whether you're shipping in but using other people's money to do it, there's not just one way to make stuff that has a UAE stamp on it.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we're talking manufacturing in the UAE because the big Make It in the Emirates event in Abu Dhabi continues today. Brandy Scott is our DJ this morning, and to get us in the mood, let's have a listen
down
to
the
this.
Factory, down at the factory, down at the factory.
Bit of Kenny Rogers heralds the arrival of Ahmed Mohamed Al Nakbi, the Chief Executive of Emirates Development Bank. Morning, Ahmed.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm good, thanks very much indeed. You as well, I'm sure. Big day for you. 5 billion dirhams, that's the amount that you committed yesterday to use your words, propel the UAE's manufacturing sector. Tell us more.
Absolutely. So this year in 2024, we've committed as Emirates Development Bank to allocate 5 billion dirhams in financing to the manufacturing sector. We've done approximately 11.3 billion up until the end of the first quarter in the first 3 years since the launch of our strategy starting in 2021.
So is this new money?
Yes, absolutely. So it's 5 billion dirhams that the bank is allocating to financing these projects in 2024.
Can you give us an example of some of the projects that you have funded recently and some of the ones that you'll be looking to fund going forward?
So there's a lot of fantastic projects, actually. I love to visit the factories myself. There's a fantastic factory out of JAFSA called ACME that I was just visiting on Friday that does advanced robotics in manufacturing. So they actually do the bespoke automation, essentially robotic arms, logistics, fantastic company. There was another great company that I visited earlier in the week for food security, where they assemble, put together essentially the powdered milk and dried milk, dried dairy goods. Called Golden Lake. So there's a lot of great manufacturers that are locating here in the UAE, expanding in the UAE, that are across those sectors, food security, renewables, agritech, and healthcare and manufacturing and advanced technology.
Yeah, those are the five priority sectors for you. I know you're looking for more than 13,000 companies to invest in, but as you have told us before, these are not grants, these are not handouts. You are a bank and you expect to be repaid. These all have to be bankable projects.
Absolutely, absolutely. So all of these projects are projects from well-established companies. You know, they could be greenfield or well-established investors. They have feasibility studies attached to them. The companies themselves could have good track records or have to have good track records. And so we ensure that the money is secured in a sense. But these are all projects that are coming to the UAE from, you know, around the region, around the world. The UAE has done a fantastic job over the past year and a half. I'm sure you've heard of the SEPA agreements, the cooperation agreements, which are targeted to be signed with 48 countries. Many countries have already signed, I believe, over the past 6 months. So many manufacturers are relocating to the UAE, and we're here to support them in setting up and establishing their facilities here in the UAE.
Yeah, the UAE President, Sheikh Mohammed bin Zayed, as you will know, is in South Korea as we speak today, holding meetings. So we're watching to see what comes out of Seoul a little bit later. And then, of course, later on in the week, he continues to Asia. Let's look at some of the potential. We were talking earlier on about what are the bottlenecks for manufacturing in the UAE. We're doing a really good job, but I made the point earlier on, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, about what we haven't got. For example, I was in India a couple of weeks ago in the state of Tamil Nadu near Chennai. That is where Foxconn chose to build its new factory to build iPhones. We don't have that kind of major FDI coming in from high-profile companies, or Samsung, to use a Korean example, making smartphones here. And the other one I was mentioning to Brandy, and again, I'd be interested to get your take on this. There was great hoopla about 10 years ago when the UAE and Abu Dhabi invested in global foundries. We were going to be a hub for manufacturing microchips here in the UAE. But again, NVIDIA isn't making its microchips here in the UAE. What do you say to that? And I'm not being negative, I'm just keen to get your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair comment in the sense that a part of the, let's say, objective is to attract FDI. And maybe Richard, from your perspective, and I could completely see it, and understand it, you might not be aware of some of the major FDI projects that have been coming to the UAE. Abu Dhabi in particular is very keen on attracting major FDI projects and has a lot of incentives, but across the UAE, there's a lot of FDI that is coming into the country. We're probably more aware or more conscious of it because, as I said, we finance those projects. So the components of FDI that come in, we finance up to, let's say, 70% of the project being established in the UAE, and then there's 30% that comes in as equity from the investors. So we see it ourselves. We can easily estimate that there's a little bit, just based on our projects, a little bit over $1 billion so far, so about 3.5 billion dirhams that have been invested directly into the UAE, into the projects that we are directly participating in. But there are multiple projects that are being established in the UAE and Abu Dhabi in particular that have major FDI components. There's a couple that have just come in recently on the food security side, where there's major agritech projects that have come into the country. And there's also on the technology side. So you probably would have heard of Amazon. Amazon is establishing its regional hub in the UAE in Abu Dhabi, if you want to talk about brand names, so to speak. But what you might not hear about is, let's say, the lesser known names. You know, so the Foxconns of the world and NVIDIAs of the world are obviously major names. But there's many players who are, let's say, less known, but relatively large in their sectors and their markets who are relocating to the UAE and bringing in that FDI component with them. So absolutely, it's very important. And probably we can do more in marketing that and putting those names out there and putting those amounts out there.
So Ahmed, what do people or companies actually need to do to qualify for a bit of this money? What's the bar?
As a bank, it's quite straightforward in the sense of, as a company, when you're applying for a loan, the bar is essentially ensuring that you can pay back that loan or that facility. It's being able to demonstrate your creditworthiness. That's step one. Step two, from our perspective, is showing the economic impact. So other than doing the credit assessment that any typical bank would do for any company business loan, we do what's called an economic impact scoring. And the reason why we do the economic impact scoring, so we evaluate things like GDP impact, jobs created, in-country value, all these kinds of qualitative, quantitative elements that yield a score. We do that to then know what kind of incentives we should be then providing to this company. Longer tenors for the loan, moratorium periods on payback of the principal. So, you know, you get like a grace period at the beginning of the loan for a couple of years. Reduced pricing on the loan itself, so to give incredibly competitive rates. Make it very comfortable for the project, for the business owner as they're setting up and establishing their company. But the qualifications is have a good bill of health, good record. You know, there's no outstandings with the central bank. There's no issues with the credit of that company. Have a proper feasibility study in place in order to demonstrate that you've studied the market, you understand your product and your project and what you're saying. And then undergo this credit assessment and the economic impact assessment.
Ahmed, just 30 seconds left with you. You mentioned sure. Interest rates there. Base rates stubbornly high, above 5% at the moment, as the Fed refuses to cut interest rates. What kind of interest rate are companies getting if they come to you with a plan at the moment?
So again, it's case by case because it's risk-based pricing. So it's not program lending, but it's risk-based pricing. But what I can say is that Emirates Development Bank forgoes a lot of the profitability. We operate on very fine margins because our DNA is to create economic impact. Our mandate's economic impact. It's not maximizing profitability. So you can expect the base rate and probably plus between 1-3% depending on the project. Which is incredibly competitive in comparison to the market. But again, it's risk-based pricing, so it's very much based on that project, the feasibility of that project, and then what we believe should be assigned to that project from a risk perspective.
Ahmed, great talk to you. Appreciate your time this morning. Busy day for you. Day two of the Make It in the Emirates event in Abu Dhabi. So we'll let you get off to that. But for now, that is Ahmed Mohammed Al Nakbi. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Emirates Development Bank. And coming up next, Brandy, someone who really does make it in the Emirates.
Yeah, indeed. Factory producing perfume in Jebel Ali. It's one of five globally for CPL. We're going to find out what their advantages were of popping a factory here.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
And with the big Make It in the Emirates forum going on in Abu Dhabi, we are speaking to people who are indeed making it in the Emirates.
I'd like to make it with you. I really think that we could make it good.
We are joined now by the perfume boss, Rauya Keto. She's the general manager of CPL Aromas. They produce fragrance oils, 2,000 tons a year of it, in Jebel Ali Free Zone and have done for a decade. Rauya, it's lovely to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Brandy. Lovely to be here.
So CPL, independent fragrance house, one of the biggies, UK headquartered. You've got five factories across the world. Why did you decide to put one here?
So moving to the UAE and coming to the Middle East was really a strategic decision because primarily of the location. So we picked up very early on that the market of fragrances in Middle East, East Africa and all of the region was going to be booming. At a moment where the West was stagnating a little bit in terms of growth, this was the area of development, hence the strategic risk and decision to build a factory over here.
So when you say location, where do you ship to from here?
So from Dubai, as you mentioned, we produce about 1,500 to 2,000 tons per year, and 50% of that is export. So for the export markets, we would cover basically anything from the GCC, East Africa. We deliver to India quite a lot. There's a good strategic advantage there. And Turkey, so all of the region pretty much. And we still have capacity to grow and increase.
How do the costs of producing here compare to the costs of what your other factories are paying? We've been talking about whether or not the UAE is a low-cost option for manufacturing. What have you found?
So essentially, cost wasn't the initial driver of moving to the UAE. However, it does have certain advantages being here as well in terms of saving on freight, saving on logistics costs and things like that. The workforce, the staff cost is obviously a little bit more interesting than when you compare to Western markets. We
when
have
you,
a factory.
You say interesting, you mean?
Advantages, let's put it that way. However, you know, we are comparing to, we've got factories in Spain and in the UK, for example, where labor costs come with a lot more, I would say, intensity than in the UAE. But cost is not the initial driver, for sure.
Can you recruit the talent that you need here?
So the interesting part was when we set up the company here, there was no prior local expertise to tap into. So we have had to basically train people from zero in terms of the needs of fragrance compounding, chemistry, and so on. We have created about 120 jobs in the region, and we're quite proud of that. And it is a specialized and expert task force. Some of our shop floor workers have been with us since the start, since 2014, and we're very proud to see how skilled they are today and how trained they are.
What about getting talent into the region for, as you say, highly trained noses in the perfume industry?
Yeah, so when I first moved to the fragrance industry in this part of the world, it was extremely difficult to attract talent. However, fast forward 20 years to, you know, today, this has become one of the most dynamic and interesting regions for the sector because of the clientele, first and foremost, and because of the global context. The world is in love with Middle Eastern fragrances. And you do have quite a lot of factories here, not just like us, fragrance oils B2B, but also B2C companies that use the UAE as their production hub. So definitely a very interesting market. And we are attracting talent from abroad.
And when you say B2B, it's because you sell into big players in the fashion industry and the cosmetics industry. People might not realize that some of the big names are actually made right here.
Yeah, exactly. And thank you for pointing that out. So our business model, we produce fragrance oil. And that's essentially the scented bit of every fragrance product you can find in the world. So from perfumes to dishwash liquids to fabric softeners. And we produce that right here in the UAE.
What about getting the raw materials in?
So that is the number one challenge of creating a manufacturing setup for fragrances in the UAE. So to give you a little bit of context, a fragrance is composed from anything between 5 to up to 300 individual raw material. And these raw materials range from commodities like solvents, you know, low-cost chemistry components, or very, very specific, luxurious, high-end naturals. To give you an example, iris concrete or oud oil, for example. These are very precious and they cost up to, for example, 20,000 euros per kilo. So managing the complexity of the stock is a very important part of the manufacturing process, and that's where the expertise lies. And also, everything is made to measure. So we do not produce, we do not hold stock. So everything is made once the order is received.
So how does that work for you in terms of supply chain? I mean, if I think of the issues we've had, we've got Red Sea issues going on at the moment. Obviously, supply chain's disrupted with COVID. Suez, what does all that mean for you?
Keeps me on my toes. That's the number one thing that we have to watch out for every single morning. We have to be able to forecast productions so that we can get the raw materials in early on. Because to give you an idea, to get any raw material in the UAE is about 45 days minimum. So our lead times for production are getting shorter and shorter because that is what customers expect. That's the trend that we're seeing. People expect anything from 3 to 7 days to have their goods in stock. So we have to always, always be on top of our raw material stock management to make sure that we are capable of delivering to those standards.
Okay, so you're in Jebel Ali Free Zone.
Yes.
Conveniently, you have a port.
Conveniently, we're in the middle of the port, and that offers extreme advantages when it comes to the logistical facilities.
You mentioned India earlier. What have the CEPA agreements, those comprehensive trade partnerships that the UAE has been signing, meant for you guys?
So the CEPA agreement came into force in 2022, right? And since then, that has offered quite a lot of fiscal advantages for some of our own customers into, for example, duty exemptions in some of the products that they can bring into India. And that came in parallel with some infrastructure work that DP World has been doing. in terms of really getting the logistics between both countries smooth and up and running. And clearly that has had an impact on our export business to India. We are now primarily located as a JAFSA company to be able to deliver to India.
So it makes a difference. These deals aren't just on paper.
No, of course they make a difference. 100%.
Before we let you go, Rawia, one of the other things we've been talking about this morning has been about the sustainability of operations. We've heard from someone working in one of the government offices to help industry and factories with energy efficiency. How energy efficient can you be here?
So sustainability is one of the most important aspects of why we've set up the factory in the UAE. One of the things that we are, as a company, it's not just words on paper and a poster. We really walk the talk when it comes to sustainability. And we wanted to make sure to offer our customers shorter supply chains, hence reducing their carbon footprints. One of the advantages, for example, of being in the UAE is that you can deliver to the GCC by truck. And that reduces massively air freighting things around from Europe. Another area is obviously, you know, we live in sunny Dubai, so solar panels are a huge advantage for us. We do hope to, we would like to reach 100% manufacturing energy sufficiency from solar panels. Still some regulatory hurdles, but we're on our way to get there.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I have to leave it there, unfortunately. Rawia Kato, General Manager of CPL Aromas, making it in the Emirates. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
So the Make It in the Emirates Forum continues today in Abu Dhabi. Big focus on that sector. Brandy Scott is DJ this morning. And to get us in the mood for our next interview, Brandy Scott will select one of our topical tunes.
I am in the industry. You are in the industry. You are in the
This is the industry, and this is the Ministry of Industry and Advanced Technology. Going to speak to His Excellency Omar Al-Suwaidi in a few moments' time. First of all, let's just remind ourselves what people who actually make it in the Emirates have to say. A short while ago, we spoke to Rawia Kato, General Manager of CPL Aromas, global company, five factories around the world. One of them is here in Dubai. She told us why they chose the UAE.
Moving to the UAE and coming to the Middle East was really a strategic decision because primarily of the location. So we picked up very early on that the market of fragrances in Middle East, East Africa and all of the region was going to be booming. At a moment where the West was stagnating a little bit in terms of growth, this was the area of development, hence the strategic risk and decision to build a factory over here.
His Excellency Omar Al-Suwaidi, Undersecretary at the Ministry of Industry and Advanced Technology, now joins us live from Abu Dhabi. Your Excellency, good morning.
Good morning, Richard.
So more than 20 billion dirhams worth of new funding announced yesterday at the conference. Explain why this is significant and where the money's going to go.
Okay, yeah, exciting day. It's actually two things. There are, you know, one of the key things that we promote and make in the Emirates is the investment opportunities, the offtake. That's the really the key thing that drives a lot of the investments, a lot of the de-risking of projects. So we had an extra 23 billion dirhams that came in mainly from ADNOC and Pure Health. That's on top of the 120 billion that we had. The 23 billion ADNOC, of course, a lot of their supply chain for their operations, whether it's valves, mechanical equipment, electricals, control systems, drilling fluids, you know, a lot of material, a lot of products that go into the operations of ADNOC. On the other side, Pure Health also, you know, looks at medical devices, consumables, pharma, you know, everything that goes into the procurement of the medical sector. So in parallel to that, the opportunities that are available, we have product, you know, projects that keep being announced. So we have the 20 billion dirhams in projects, a variety of projects. You're looking at the automotive sector with some of like the electrical harnesses and some of the plasticware that goes into automotive. There are things that go into the downstream of metals like aluminum and steel. We have more pharma coming in. We have food security from poultry to things that go into the life science, so supplements, food, feedstock. You know, there's a whole host of products. This is really part of the 1,400, now 2,000 products that we have available in the MECTIN Emirates program and forum that's available for local and international investors.
Well, let's talk about one of the issues on the agenda yesterday, which was energy and access to affordable energy for manufacturing companies. It's a massive cost for anyone involved in manufacturing. And your colleague, Sultan Al-Jaber, the minister, saying that competitive electricity prices will be provided for industrial companies. And he cited Ajman, Ras Al Khaimah, Umm Al Quwain and Fujairah, the Northern Emirates in particular. Explain why this is important, particularly for those Northern Emirates.
Well, we're trying to drive industrial development all across UAE. And of course, you have different energy providers across UAE. So for Abu Dhabi, Dubai and Sharjah, you have individual local energy providers. And for the Northern Emirates, you have the federal authority that provides the energy there. And we've done a lot of work with the Ministry of Energy and the Federal Authority for Power and Water. And we specifically targeted industrial companies, and they, you know, been really very responsive to come up with different tranches for industry. Really, a lot of our focus is, you know, we have these strategic 11 sectors. Industry, of course, we're trying to electrify more of this industry. And so having the capacity and then having some support for these entities in the Northern Emirates, that's where the federal authority came in. We're trying to introduce all kind of low carbon, whether it's through gas and also renewables through solar. And of course, you know, with the nuclear coming in, we're trying to diversify the energy mix and decarbonize all of our industries. So for us, this is a great boost. It's one of the many solutions that you know, we have available. And of course, the government, you know, supported this and made this announcement with our two partners. So again, we're trying to almost, I wouldn't say level the playing field, but also but provide more options for our industry across all of the Emirates. Each Emirate has its own, you know, competitive advantages and different industries that complement each other. So this is one more piece that we're adding to industry.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned solar power then. One of the questions we had in was from one factory owner saying, when can you make it easy for us to use solar power in our factory? So it's good that you addressed that. Can I ask you about artificial intelligence? It's a buzzword at the moment, and some people are getting bored of hearing about it. I know my colleague Georgia was at the media forum yesterday. There, the big theme was artificial intelligence. You and Sultan Al-Jaber were talking about it as well. In practice, Your Excellency, on the factory floors of Ajman and Fujairah, what does artificial intelligence mean?
Artificial intelligence has a wide spectrum. It's you know, can be simple. It could be quite sophisticated. And you know, you'll be surprised. You think that it's the very sophisticated companies like Edge and those kind of companies that have the AI and the top automation. It's actually all across. We have packaging companies. We have F&B companies that use AI and automation in their operations. Of course, a lot of it has an impact on streamlining the operations, you know, bringing in efficiency, increasing productivity, producing less of their feedstock, cutting waste, you know, helping with recycling. So there's a lot that, you know, can, not only can, but it's already in place and use in our factories. We actually, yesterday in the Make It in the Emirates Awards, we had two awards that focus on innovation and advanced technology. So we actually see that in practice, and we see companies and industries benefiting directly from AI. So it might be at its early stage. There's a lot of practicalities in use right now in our factories, and that's what we're trying to showcase in this event. And whoever is still has time, you know, the forum still runs till this evening. There's a lot of showcasing of AI use in industry and actual companies implementing this. So an invitation to all to come and attend at the Abu Dhabi Energy Center in Abu Dhabi.
Well, Your Excellency, one of our listeners, Pablo, got up at 5:30 this morning and has been driving from Ras Al Khaimah to Abu Dhabi to attend the event. So if you see him today, do please say hello to Pablo. But for now, Your Excellency, we'll let you go. It's a busy time for you. His Excellency Omar Suwaina Al-Suwaidi, the Undersecretary at the Ministry of Industry and Advanced Technology, speaking to the Business Breakfast.
This is the Bite-Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Let's talk banking now, because the banks are booming. Top 10 banks of the country saw profitability grow in the first quarter by more than 9%. They made a combined 21 billion dirhams. Let's find out more now. Asel Ahmed is the managing director of the consultancy Alvarez & Marsal, former boss of National Bank of Fujairah, among others. Morning, Asad.
Good morning.
This just looks like a good news story all ends up. What's your view?
Absolutely. It is a good end story. All the numbers are positive. Net income is, of course, positive, as you mentioned, but lower operating costs, lower impairment. So a dream quarter.
Can the banks sustain this?
So that's a good question. I think the banks have proven to be very resilient. I don't see anything on the horizon which would lead me to any form of worry. I think they should be able to sustain this through the quarter, though I do expect some interest margins to squeeze when the rates start coming down.
Okay. There's an old cliche in banking, and you'll have heard this, that bad loans are made in good times. And you've been around long enough to see cycles, and we've seen them in the UAE banking sector as well. I mean, the most recent downturn was, what, 2014, 2015? It wasn't pretty for a lot of banks then, where there were a lot of loan defaults. What's the risk of that happening now?
So I'm a firm believer of that adage. I think the asset growth right now is not of a number that it's worrying, but it is very possible that some loans will come to show themselves. I think the construction industry is really booming again, and as you say, we've seen cycles in Dubai, so that is an area where something may show up at some point.
But all the bigger picture is that the banks are doing well, the mainstream banks, the FABs, the Emirates NBDs, and the Tier 2 and Tier 3 banks as well. Let's look at some of the other issues that your most recent report brings up, and that is the emergence of new banks or new entities providing financial services. You talk about EITC, which is effectively DO getting a financial services license. You look at the rise of a number of different banks here. We have the CEO of WIO Bank, the digital bank in Abu Dhabi, on last week. Roya in Ajman is launching, and so on. These new banks, what do you make of them?
I think it's just not the new banks. It's the new era of financial services that's coming globally. They will eventually be competitive to banks, and I think banks will have to learn to live with them. They haven't made a tremendous mark here yet, but the wave is definitely there.
So in terms of these new banks and EITC, telecommunications company, and you make this observation in your report, getting into financial services, are there any concerns you have about that, about the mission creep of non-banks getting into this space?
No, I don't, actually, because I think embedded financial services is happening globally, firms are expanding their remit. So this is part of the new world. And I think it'll be welcome.
You and I have been speaking for years about consolidation in the UAE banking sector, and occasionally it does happen. We had the creation of FAB in Abu Dhabi. We had the creation of the enlarged ADCB in Abu Dhabi. So it can happen. What's next? What needs to happen in your view? Not a prediction of what will, but what you think needs to happen.
So right now, I don't see anything on the horizon. The top 10 banks account for about 90% of total banking assets. So the rest of the seven or six, they account for 10. Largely, they have been quiet in the last little while. But in the recent couple of years, we have seen that these smaller banks, which are not part of the top 10, have rejuvenated themselves. Some have recapitalized. Some are rebuilding their niches. So as principle, by and large, yes, consolidation is good, but right now I don't see anything happening.
And what about acquisitions, M&A, outside of the UAE? There's been lots of chatter about FAB maybe making a bid for Standard Chartered. That hasn't happened yet. Is it something, but we have seen Emirates NBD buying a Turkish bank. That did happen. What do you see in terms of outflowing M&A from the UAE banks?
Sure. So I think Turkey and Egypt have been two markets where the UAE banks have consistently looked at. And of course, the expansion in Egypt is much further on for several of the UAE banks. And ENBD did buy Deniz. We did see an announcement recently, though, that FAB is looking at Yapı Kredi in Turkey. So these markets, I think, continue to be attractive to the local banks.
Finally, Asad, can I ask you about your business at Alvarez & Marsal, big international management consultancy, almost 10,000 people worldwide. You've worked with them. You rejoined them about 10 years ago when you guys were 20 people in the region. Now you're 250, this boom in what I'm going to call management consulting. What kind of questions are you and the financial services team being asked when you work in the UAE, or as a lot of consultants do, when you work in Saudi Arabia? Everything's going so well. Why do they need consultants?
I think it's just a question of capacity, consultants' assistant capacity. But I personally prefer not to be called a consultant so much. We are folks who do execution. We are implementation people. I think I would call ourselves transformation people more than consultants. Out of the 9,500, 10,000 people that we have, more than half actually come from a work background. Like myself, I come from an FS background. So we have people coming in from healthcare. We have people coming in from retail or wholesale or aviation. But people who have been in their line of work before joining A&M. So it is, yes, it's been wonderful for us.
So you don't just send them a PowerPoint slide deck and an invoice?
No, we don't send them a PowerPoint slide. Actually, we prefer to say, can we be part of the implementation process? And that would help us more.
Well, it's clearly working. Asad, great to speak to you as always. And nice to see you in the studio this
Good
morning.
To see
Appreciate you,
too. You Thank
coming
you very
in.
Much.
The
Thank
thoughts
you.
Of Asad Ahmed there. He's the Managing Director of Financial Services at Alvarez & Marsal in this region. And as I mentioned earlier, he's a real grown-up banker as well, former boss of National Bank of Fujairah.
You are listening to The Business Breakfast. It's coming up to 8 o'clock this morning. Let's have a look at what we've still got on the next 2 hours of the show.
Download the ARN News Centre app and stay up to date wherever you go.
Available for free on the App Store and Google Play. You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.